Lesson 10 Advice for the Local Church. I'm here with Jonathan Howard, as always, I'm joined by Tom Rayner, the President and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Jonathan, we are watching a marriage take place right before our digital eyes. We're watching things that are happening that I don't know that really a whole lot of people in Christian ministry are understanding. It's easy to understand, but you got to step back and look at it. And here's what's happening. It has to do with the whole idea of preparation for ministry. Typically, the preparation for ministry would be go to a Bible college or go to a seminary and then go into the church. And
yeah.
If you were in a Christian culture, it could work just fine. But now in the non-Christian culture that we're even post-Christian culture in which we find ourselves, leadership in that culture, relational skills in that culture is so different than it used to be. And so right before our eyes, we're watching partnerships take place. For example, just on this podcast, we are working on the practical application, the leadership, the relational issues. But our partnership is with Midwestern Seminary, who I don't want to suggest that Midwestern is void of those issues, but their focus is on preparing people for the church, teaching, preaching, theological training, and they are partnering with us so that we can join together and help prepare people better. That's going to be one of the issues that we will be talking about on this entire podcast about staff conflict, about those who aren't prepared to go into the church.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to give that segue into our sponsor, Midwestern, because they are a prime example of one of the ways that we are addressing this issue.
Yeah, and it's really a changing ministry landscape. And to get prepared for this changing ministry landscape, you can get your Master of Divinity degree at Midwestern Seminary. The MDiv, Midwestern's flagship degree program, is their primary track for ministry preparation. At just 81 hours, the Midwestern MDiv offers a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering everything you need and nothing you don't. Join other students in vibrant Kansas City as you train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a new culture of discipleship devoted to the local church and committed to taking God's unchanging word into a rapidly changing world. Join the movement today and find out more at mbts.edu/mdiv.
So that is our segue, Jonathan, into number one. We've talked, here we are at Rainer on Leadership, but we start off with a seminary as our sponsor. Brings us into number one.
All right. Many church staff persons are woefully trained in leadership and relational skills.
Yeah, it was that way when I was a pastor back in the old days. Of course, you know my story. I started pastoring my first church in 1984. Because I had been in the business world, I had had a good bit of training in leadership. Someone might have questioned my relational skills because, quite frankly, I have no relational skills.
Some might still question those.
That's exactly what I was saying. They may still question my relational skills. But I saw many pastors and other staff persons go into a church situation and metaphorically get eaten alive because they didn't know how to lead. They didn't know how to relate. They didn't understand when they said something to someone, they took it a certain way. And as a result, they just really did not handle things well. That same situation happens between staff members. And if you are not trained, if you do not understand staff relational issues, if you don't understand the dynamics of team, if you don't understand what it is like to be a part of something that is greater, you're going to have staff conflict. And by the way, I have my recommended book. It's a secular book, The Ideal Team Player.
Okay.
By Patrick Lencioni. But it's a little bit more than that because he ends talking about Christ. It just blows me away. All this is business book, leadership book. And he said, however, nothing really matters under this unless it's under the lordship of Christ. Patrick Lencioni at the end of his book. So he's obviously coming from a Christian framework as well. But if you're not trained in how to connect with others, particularly how to be a team player. And that's why I recommend that book, because it talks about what the ideal team player looks like, the elements of the ideal team player, the three major elements. And so that's one of the reasons that there's staff conflict, is because we haven't learned how not to have conflict.
All right. And just a reminder on this to the listeners, what we're doing, we're going over this blog post on staff conflict, these 12 reasons for it. And what we're going to do is offer, you know, ways to handle that, ways to help you handle staff conflict within your context. So first one is, you know, a good book on
learn some leadership and relational skills. And I would recommend that staff come together and read The Ideal Team Player. Yeah. And instead of saying, how can this apply to this other person? Ask this question, what can I learn personally from that? Good book.
Yeah,
good
and
book.
Continuous online or continuous leadership training and relational training for the staff. I mean, don't just read one book and think, okay, we got to figure it out.
And you point well made. The greatest leaders, those with the greatest relational skills in churches, are ongoing learners.
Yeah. All right, the second point here is that often the church staff involved did not have a role in selecting their team.
Sometimes pastors will say, I want a fresh team when I come in, but most of the time that is not the case. Sometimes an executive pastor, a worship leader, a student leader will be on staff, the pastor leaves, and, oh, we're getting a new pastor. And most of the time they're not going to have a role in selecting their new boss. The reality of it is, and even, that's true even in the corporate world most of the time. You don't get to select most of the people that are going to be around you.
You didn't come into Lifeway and get rid of 1,100 people and hire 1,100 new people whenever you came in the first day.
Or 5,000.
I was just thinking about
Lifeway. You're thinking about the headquarters alone. But yeah,
I forget about them. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
My bad.
Other than 4,000 Lifeway employees that Jonathan just totally ignored.
Sorry.
Out.
Love you.
So, yeah, I did not do that, nor did I have any desire to do that. So if you don't have a role in selecting your team, it goes back to number one. How can you be the best leadership and relational person with what you have been given? The old cliche, the cards that have been dealt. Mm. Now, you may have to make some changes as a leader as you go along, or sometimes as a person reporting to a leader, you may be changed, or you may decide to opt out and go somewhere else. But number one really applies to number two. If you don't have a role in selecting your team, then make the most of it by finding out how you can be the best team player. Now, there's another perspective on this. I think a pastor should have a major role in selecting church staff.
While
he is there. Yeah. And so if a search committee is formed and they don't get any input, there may be a sense that this has been forced upon me, and you start off with resentment and resistance right away.
And that's bad chemistry, and that would be point number three.
Yeah. Again, so much of this, and I don't want to suggest that one single book is the answer, okay?
Unless it's the Bible.
Well, yeah, that's true. Thanks for saving me on that one. If you hadn't done that one, there would have been an email, and there would have been a comment on the blog or on the podcast. So yeah. I don't want to suggest that The Ideal Team Player by Patrick Lencioni is the perfect book. But what Lencioni does is he takes the principle of Collins, get the right people on the bus, get them on the right seat on the bus. And what Collins will admit in all of this is really a 1 Corinthians 12 type of leader, where he's making certain that we are matching people with their giftedness, with their leadership styles, and making certain that people are in the right place. Chemistry is often bad because people are in the wrong seat. Chemistry isn't bad because people do not have relational skills. Have you ever known someone that didn't have relational skills? Yeah, I've known someone who didn't have relational skills. I've known lots of people who didn't have relational skills. And they can be learned, and they should be learned. And so I recommend further training, and again, trying to make this a little simpler and clearer, I'm just saying start with the Lencioni book as a good way to build that team chemistry.
All right, number four talks about alignment. The priorities among the staff are not aligned.
Yeah, this would be Eric, get your alignment right, Geiger.
Yes.
One of the geniuses in that, and when he wrote Simple Church, and I ended up putting my name on it to join him, this was one of his major areas, ministry alignment in church. But it's not just ministry alignment. It is also philosophical vision alignment among the staff. Let's imagine that you have a staff, and the pastor says, we're going to spend the next 12 months truly focusing on penetrating our community evangelistically. And let's suppose that there's a student minister and says, well, that pastor's going to do that, but we're going to do our thing. We're just not going to pay any attention to it. And then there's a children's minister that says, we're going to do our thing. Well, all of a sudden, you have a lot of mini, M-I-N-I, churches. And you have these groups that are formed, and you have alliances that oppose one another. One of the things that has to happen for a church to be aligned in its ministry is the staff to do so. So here's what I recommend. I recommend leadership have a regular staff time. It may be an annual retreat that is then supplemented by weekly or monthly meetings. And one of the key questions that needs to be asked is, are we aligned with what we have said we're going to do? Now, what does that mean? Alignment means, are we spending our money? Are we spending our time? Are we emphasizing to our people the priority of what we said we would be? And if misalignment takes place, then you deal with it in the context. Misalignment usually happens because of alignment drift. It's not that someone says, I am going to openly rebel against what we said our vision would be. It's just it does not get emphasized, there's no accountability, and so there begins to be a drift. So there has to be some type of system in place, like regular staff meeting, regular accountability, where we ask the question, are we aligned?
And this kind of relates to the next two, and we'll kind of cover this together. But misalignment is often a product of jealousy and insecurity, as well as insubordination.
Yeah. One of the classic examples that you and I heard recently was from a worship leader whose pastor, the pastor came in after the worship leader, you know, going back to number two. But the pastor was very insecure because the worship leader had an incredible base following. Not that the worship leader used it for advantage over the pastor. It was just a natural thing. And instead of saying, I've got this great worship leader that so many people are listening to, let's line up together, the pastor tried to minimize him, ostracize him, and put him on the fringes because he was jealous of him. And as a result, in one of the, I think, an incredible and noble move, the worship leader said, I am not here to undermine my pastor. And he left. And it was, you know, it's a sad story, but it's an incredible story where a subordinate actually said, I am not going to stay around and be non-aligned, insubordinate, which again, we're going to get to in number six. I'm not going to be misaligned. And so if my pastor feels like I am undermining the work of the vision, then I am going to leave.
Well, and moving on to number six, insubordination, what does that look like a lot of times in the church?
Insubordination is usually passive aggressive.
Okay.
It's usually the pastor saying, here's the vision, and there's a lot of nodding going on. We're going to do that. I've got to say, in the leadership role I've had at Lifeway, I can't remember someone saying, I'm not going to do this. But I can tell you a lot of times I would say something and they would only give lip service to it and then they would go do their own thing. And I would have to spend so much time pulling them back in. To finally, if I had to keep doing that, I just said, this is not working. And so we had to have someone off the team, or even more than one person off the team. Most of the time, insubordination is not a stick it in your face. No. Most of the time, it is passive aggressive type of behavior.
All right. And number seven, also, it can manifest as number seven as well, where church staff have formed unhealthy alliances.
Yeah. Again, let's try to answer the, you know, what can you do about this? All of this comes back to alignment, Jonathan. All of this comes back to making sure everybody's on the same page, and not just with a nod of the head, but also with what they are doing with their ministries and holding them accountable. And that accountability starts at every level, not just a pastor making sure everybody else is accountable. It's the pastor being accountable for the vision as well. And so unhealthy alliances, I'm thinking about one of the most unhealthy alliances I've seen in recent years. It is where the pastor was trying to get everybody on the same page, aligned for the vision, because the church definitely, almost desperately, needed to go in a certain direction, and it was working. And about two-thirds of the staff, large staff, were aligned. The other third became passive-aggressive, and then they turned from passive-aggressive to aggressive. And they began to align with, I refer to this in a blog post as the cartel.
Yeah, the bully cartel.
The bully cartel. And as a result, the bully cartel ultimately gave the pastor an ultimatum to get out. And although he didn't have to, rather than split the church, he chose to. So that is a case where the church staff, because they were being held accountable, because they were expected to have a work hour of longer than 20 hours a week as a full-time staff, because they were being pushed in a certain direction, they found some of the unhealthiest and weakest people within the church that they knew could push their agenda. So that happens. Now, you know, what is the solution to that? Well, sometimes the solution is to get the person off the team. Obviously, it did not happen here. Probably should have happened quicker, but it may have been another church split as well if you had done that. But again, Jonathan, the solution to this is ongoing communication, ongoing accountability, making certain two things happen. You're philosophically aligned, which is theologically as well, and that your actions reflect your philosophical alignment.
All right, number eight is that communication is poor.
Oh, this happens in leadership all the time. It's happened with me so many times, and I'm talking about me being the poor communicator. There are times that I presume because I know something that others know it, and I'm just dead wrong. There are times here at Lifeway that I think, oh, the entire company knows where we're headed, and I find out that I'm living in my executive bubble here, and I really do not know what's going on. How much communication is too much? I've never seen it. I've never seen over communication. And it's time for a son story.
Okay.
So we're going to get
it. We've only had three or four so far.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
You just haven't used names.
So every Sunday that I am at the church at Spring Hill, one of the two pastors, John or Jess, will say the same thing. And they will talk about belong to the body of Christ, thrive, get in a community group, and connect with others. Go. Let's go into the community. I hear it every single week. Belong, thrive, go. And they probably get tired of saying that, but they don't stop saying that because they know redundancy is the key. And they don't just say, here's our vision statement. They give the implications all the time. Jess, right before his preaching, was giving an announcement about an emphasis they would have, and he said, this is part of belong, thrive, go. This is the go part. This is why we do what we do. And so the church is simple. There's clarity. There's alignment. But also they are communicating and not assuming just because they've said it 238 times that everybody knows it. Redundancy is key here. So the solution here in handling staff conflict is to communicate, to communicate, to communicate with your staff, both upline, downline, and across line with peers. All of the above.
All right, one question on communication. There seems to be like two different ways that people communicate poorly. Either one, that they don't communicate enough. They just don't tell, or they don't talk about whatever it may be.
Right.
The other is that we talk about anything and everything, and people don't know what the main thing is. So which one of those do churches fall into traps more, and how do they combat both?
I think the latter is the more common.
Okay. Talk about everything.
Yeah.
And we miss the main things.
Yeah, we're busy chasing the rabbits, and we're busy in activities, and we're so busy, the tyranny of the urgent, or another metaphor is putting out the fires, or focusing on the idea of the week, that we miss the main thing. So more than anything, I think that is where the breakdown takes place.
Now, how do you combat that?
Again, it's total alignment. It is a constant reminder. Communication, here's what we're about. Here are main foci. That's plural focuses.
Yes, I know that one.
Here, in staff meeting, what are you doing to be aligned? How are we carrying this out? So communication, accountability, and expectation, three words.
All right. Number nine, there are work ethic divergences.
In the church, you can have the lazy sluggards, the proverbial, I'm talking about biblical proverbial, lazy sluggards, and you can have the workaholics. And you can have the people who have a healthy work balance as well. But if one staff member sees another staff member, both of them full-time, for example, paid, and one of them is doing a 20-hour work week and the other is doing a 50-hour work week, resentment will build.
Yeah. It's only natural.
Yeah. It happens in an organization like Lifeway. It happens in a church. And so you have to hold people accountable for a work ethic, not in a sense of legalism or pushing them too hard, but you have to hold them accountable. And if people don't have a work ethic and they're using God's money, then you have to either change their behavior, or they have to leave, one of the two.
Well, and that kind of brings up the next point about pointing blame at one another. And I see that kind of tied a lot to the previous ones, but to number nine especially. Are there ways to address a work ethic, like if you see it and like the supervisor doesn't? So say children's and youth or children's and adults or whatever it may be. Maybe it's just associate levels, or maybe it's just work, you know, maybe it's an assistant or somebody like that who's just not putting in the work ethic that's needed. How do you address that as kind of somebody on the same level?
As a peer.
Yeah, as a peer, without it looking like you're tattling to the boss or something.
Well, first of all, who said it's anything wrong with tattling to the boss?
If you have
appropriately addressed it with that person first.
Okay.
So let's say that person is a peer, student minister, say a children's minister, and you know, say the two of them are there. If that person has a problem with the work ethic of another person, what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to go to them and say, "Look, this is what I see. Tell me I'm seeing it wrong, but I just see that you are not accountable for God's money. You're not accountable for stewardship." Now, you know, what if the response is negative? Could be.
Yeah.
But that is still what you're supposed to do. If that does not solve the problem with the peer, then you then are supposed to go to the leadership of the church and say, "Look, it's not my role. I need to be doing my own ministry, my own stuff. But here is someone who is really wasting God's money. Are we going to do anything about it?" If nothing then happens, the person has to make the decision. Are they going to live with someone with inferior work ethic and just stay on staff because leadership's not going to do anything about it? Or are they going to move elsewhere?
Yeah. One of the two. And how do you determine what is actually an inferior work ethic? Because I think a lot of times we see that as less than me, or you know, a workaholic is somebody who works more than me. So
yeah,
makes sense. Usually, you become the baseline.
Yeah, we always hold ourselves up as the gold standard. That's why there is no easy answer, and that's why you go to that person and talk with them. You may find out that person is doing a lot more than you really think they are, and you may have a total change of mind. So there's not a simple answer to your question, but it's not always our work hours are the perfects, and everybody, and those below are the sluggards, and those above are the workaholics.
Yeah. All right, number 11, solutions are frustrated or thwarted.
Yeah, the pastor will go, for example, to the personnel committee, and the pastor will say, this is what's going on with this person. I need y'all's help in dealing with it. And the personnel committee said, no, you know, that's just not the Christian thing to do. Well, malarkey. That's just terrible response. It's not the Christian thing to do nothing. When people do not address issues that are happening in the church, they're basically saying, we don't mind throwing away God's money and time. And so if you have a personnel committee, or if you have some type of authoritative body like an elder or elders that do not respond to these situations, you've got to do one or two things. You've got to decide, can you live with it, or do you need to move on?
And also, there's a fine line between, you know, holding people accountable and ruling with an iron fist.
Yeah.
And that as well.
Yeah, there's the legalism and the despot who takes it to an extreme.
The final point here is that there's a consistent lack of appreciation.
Jonathan, I have a blog post, and I know the people will be seeing it shortly. We'll put a link to it eventually, and we'll be talking about it. But it's unique ways to show appreciation. And I think I made it to the pastor but it can work for the staff. And it'll be coming up on December 14th. And so
you got that all planned out, don't you?
Yeah, I did. and so in a month from now, month from the air date of this, I think I do some solutions. I love it when people show Pastor Appreciation Day, Staff Appreciation Day. Our church just did it for our staff. It was really well received. But I would like to see churches be more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a formal day to do so. So be on the lookout for that blog post in 30 days.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks again to our sponsor, Vanderblum & Search Group. They're the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblum & Search Group by visiting WeStaffTheChurch.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainier on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainier?
Once again, I don't make a book a magic solution, a magic bullet solution, but I've been just very impressed with the understanding of team dynamics by the ideal team player. So we've got the link there. I have never met Patrick Lencioni, and I may not increase in sales from $1 million to $2 million, but I hope that many people will get a hold of that book.
All right. Thanks again for joining us today on Rainier on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes or Google Play or your favorite podcasting app, and join us online at tomrainier.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.